Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Just want to say before we get into our first episode, we're going to be recapping the press conference from DeAndre, Mikal Bridges, Elia Kobo, and George King. But first off, I just want to say thanks to all of our listeners out there. We have reached a personal record for us on Friday's episode. We have eclipsed way ahead of our personal record. So appreciate you guys listening in for on that episode and throughout the offseason. We're not going to be slowing down anytime soon and throughout the season. So once more, I just want to say thanks for all the appreciations we've gotten and also for the Twitter support we've gotten. We've gotten a lot more Twitter support in the past few months or so. So appreciate you guys all following along, and it's going to be a fun offseason. So let's just dive right really quickly into it, Brendan. Just, I know you weren't there at the press conference on Friday, but I was to see Aiden and all those guys. But I know you watched it online as well. So before I get into my in-person reactions, what was your takeaways from how Igor and DeAndre and all those guys talked?
Yeah, I went through some of it online to write a piece for Brightside. Mostly I was interested to hear what Kokoschkov said because he was the only person involved. Did James Jones talk?
He got asked one question. That was it.
Okay, because I didn't see it, but obviously we talked to McDonough on draft night. We talked to the guys who got drafted outside of – we didn't talk to Okobo or George King, but I thought it was – I mean, I think my biggest takeaway is one I already was ready for, and I'm really just excited to cover Ayton. I think whatever becomes of this draft for the Suns, and I kind of – touched on this overall idea in the piece I wrote on Right Side of the Sun, it's going to be one we look back on as a turning off point. I mean, to trade up and also have the number one pick, those either one of those things would be a pretty big night for a franchise. The Suns did both at once. So I think that the fact that those guys seem to already have a relationship is good, and the fact that Ayton is taking that responsibility and opportunity really seriously and is excited about it, saying all the right things. It's, you know, all signs are good right now. And so I'm excited to see what happens next.
Were you kind of surprised? Because I asked Igor about Elia Kobo, but also Igor asked a couple times about DeAndre, and not once did he mention his offense, only he mentioned his defense. Is that a good sign for you, in your opinion, that Igor's really going to, right from the beginning, just drill in defensive habits into him?
I think it's awesome. I think the fact that he was talking about him in that way, it's not how a lot of people that are Ayton detractors feel about his defense, but seems like the whole franchise believes in that ability or his ability on that side of the ball. So if that does come along, obviously they hit this pick out of the ballpark. You know, if his defense really gets to the level that these guys seem to think it can, it's going to be awesome. So I thought that was awesome to hear from Kokoschkov. I thought the quote I pulled that really encapsulated his excitement in my mind. Even, I mean, it's crazy to consider too, just how odd it must be for him going through the process with Luka, a candidate for the number one pick, and to, you know, have the team zero in. And it doesn't seem like he's disappointed. He's not, you know, sulking about it. He's excited to get to work with Ayton. It must be so weird. But he said, good players always inspire you as a coach. So I think that he obviously sees the talent. He's never worked with a guy like this. I mean, obviously, these kinds of players don't really exist in Europe. And, you know, Rudy Gobert is not really the type of offensive talent. And that's where he just spent his last few seasons. So I think that all of us are pretty excited to see what Ayton can do in this offense, for sure.
Yeah, what's your, I guess it's really early on to say this, but I tweeted this on the Brightside account last night. What's your, like, day one expectations for DeAndre? And are you expecting him to be, like, an Anthony Davis kind of impact, where he's 20-10 right from the offset, or are you expecting some sort of development curve for him?
I think he'll produce, because I think this franchise is kind of wide open. Teams need more than one score, no matter how good Devin Booker will get or has been already. We knew that he wasn't the only option on a good team, a good offense. So I said this, people should check out the Locked On NBA, the league-wide show that I went on last night. It went up today. And I said this, made this same point, like, Ayton's going to be able to produce and be as good as he possibly wants to be and can be. This franchise is wide open for him to produce. There's going to be offensive possessions, as many as he'd like, I think. You know, if he really comes around quickly, I think it'll be right there for him to take the team over. And so the sky's the limit is kind of cheesy, but I really do think with how little talent this franchise had, like I saw some of the stuff people were saying on there on the Bright Side tweet that you put out. I don't think, you know, I don't think he's going to get to like 25 and 15 or anything, but I think he could be a double-double guy right away.
I can see that too, because I was looking at some rookie stats and I was kind of thrown off by it, because I saw a realistic one that said like 16, 10 and a half, two assists and 1.5 blocks. I'm like, okay, that's toning it down a little bit. But then I looked at the rookie stats. Only Dikembe Mutombo, David Robinson, and Tim Duncan have ever averaged that. So if DeAndre Ayton is that legit from the get-go, he's going to be really, really good. But one of the takeaways I took away from it really right up from draft night too, if we want to talk about that as well, was just it's seemingly them going all in on Devin Booker as their guy, in my opinion, because all of a sudden you saw last season how he had no spacing at all to work with. He still averaged 25, 5, and 5, and now he has an ideal spacer in Mikal Bridges, who shot 40% for his career at Villanova, 7'2" wingspan. Him and Josh Jackson would be able to cover on the perimeter for him, and that will allow Devin Booker to hide out on defense if he wants to on the worst defender. And now he has a guy in DeAndre Ayton down low who he can just feed it down low to really increase his playmaking to probably an elite level around plus 30% assist percentage. For me, it seems like Devin Booker, all the cards are pointing towards him becoming like a national breakout guy in year four, because really, Igor Kokoshkov, Ryan McDonough have given him all the ingredients to really become a really, really elite offensive weapon.
Yeah, I think Scott Bordeaux was the guy who mentioned the fact that Igor is only planning to, has said he's only going to use Devin Booker as a point guard in crunch time situations. Did he say that at the press conference? Do you know where that came from? Because I saw it referred to, but I hadn't heard it.
Yeah, we actually had one-on-one opportunities after the press conference with all those guys, and Scott and I were talking to Igor and Ryan McDonough about that. McDonough more pointed towards him getting the ball once he was past half court. He didn't want him to get tired out like 94 feet like by a Patrick Beverley type of guy. So maybe getting a guy like Elia Kobu to bring up half court and then tossing it off to Booker in like a combo guard sort of role makes a lot of sense for him.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I think that the flexibility you're mentioning was obviously – I mean, I think a lot of the media in there, when they, especially after the Bridges trade, that just really knocked the ceiling off the top of what they're going to be able to do from a flexibility standpoint. And a lot of fans have been asking on Twitter. There's been a lot of conversation about, like, who's the odd man out. I think Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, TJ Warren, all three of those players were candidates to be involved in offseason moves. And I think that probably kind of got expounded on draft night because of the acquisition of Bridges. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think Bridges has just as much talent, if not more, than all those guys. And he brings a ready-made skill set for what this team needs and what the NBA requires of wings. So I think Booker's ability to be protected on both ends, handle the ball more, have space to work, all that stuff got answered in a big way on draft night.
Now, this is kind of off topic here a little bit, but I was looking at some previous like NBA Finals teams and how they constructed their rosters. And I mentioned this on Friday's episode with Max and David Nash and Coles Wicker. And I mentioned that Orlando is kind of a possibility for the team roster construction, because you have DeAndre and your physical force down low, like a Dwight Howard. But how they spaced the four for Dwight Howard with their lineup in the finals of Rafer Alston, Mikal Petras, Hedo Turkoglu, and then Rashard Lewis at the small ball four, 6'7", 215 pounds. That reminds me a lot of Mikal Bridges too. So if they think he's kind of like a Rashard Lewis type, I think that's a home run trade for them.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear McDonough too on draft night refer to the flexibility of Bridges to even be a small ball four. It's really interesting. It's tough to know, really. I went back and watched Gonzaga Villanova from non-conference play last college season, and I mean, I knew this about Villanova. It makes it so tough sometimes to, especially Bridges. Brunson just kind of handled the ball and played a pretty typical point guard role. But all their, from 2 to 5, all of their players were so long and athletic and all could shoot. They're pretty interchangeable, kind of like the Hawks, 2014-15 Hawks under Mike Budenholzer, that type of, where all the guys can kind of do the same thing. Nobody's really small or bigger. They're just interchangeable. So Bridges could easily slide up and do that. I think he has a lot of the skills. He's a solid rebounder for his position. He can post up. He can obviously defend bigger players. So it's really interesting to think about what his eventual role is and how they slot him in, because he played a pretty typical 3-and-D role for Villanova, but I do think that there's a ton of upside in his game, so it's just a matter of what happens.
Before we go into our final takeaways from the press conference, anything you wanted to bring up, I wanted to bring up just one more point with Bridges and Josh Jackson, because I think we mentioned this on Thursday's episode when we were on the court side at Talkie Resort Arena, but from a competitiveness standpoint, from a locker room culture standpoint, I feel like Mikhail Bridges is really going to challenge Josh Jackson in an amazing way. I think adding him into the fold is really going to make Josh Jackson think, hey, right away, Mikhail Bridges is going to want to be that guy that's going to be locking down the number one guy, but Josh Jackson is supposed to be that guy. So I really think him and Mikhail Bridges together are going to be a really competitive duo that's going to be pushing each other more towards being better on defense. That's a really good sign.
Bridges is older than Jackson, right?
Yeah, he's a year older.
Yeah, so I think that it's going to be an interesting thing to see play out throughout the course of the season, is what type of voice Bridges is in the locker room, coming from the college program with the most pedigree in the country at this point, having won 2 championships, having had so much success, having a relationship a little bit. It's not like they're best friends, but the fact that him and DeAndre are getting along so well already, it's going to be interesting to see. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's just going to be quiet in the corner the way that other young players on this team and across the league tend to be. So that is going to be really interesting, and we touched on it after the draft, but I think it's going to be one of the biggest things I'm looking for through summer league and obviously into the course of the season.
Now, as far as the press conference goes, before we dive into we're only going to cover the first few minutes of the free agency preview. We're going to be doing that Wednesday and Friday as well. But any final takeaways you have as far as the press conference goes with Mikhail Bridges and DeAndre Ayton?
No, I mean, I think people should go check out the little video that the Suns put together of Elia Kobo. I don't want to forget about him. They did a little, followed him around on draft night in New York and all the press he was doing, his like initial reaction when he puts on the Suns hat. It was pretty cool to see. He just really does seem like a guy who's, people could be pretty upset that they fell to 31. He was mocked like 20, 21, 22, or somewhere in that range. Seemed like an obvious first rounder heading into the night. And the fact that he still has a big smile on his face and has said nothing but good things, I think, he's going to have that mentality is the right one, especially with an uphill battle he will face to get minutes in the NBA. This team probably has 2 or 3 guys who are going to be playing ahead of him already. So to have that mentality, I think, is perfect and fits in with the, again, we're heading into a season where this team's going to be crazy young. We kind of thought it might not happen, but I think that culture will be good.
I can totally agree with you there. And before we dive in really quickly, you brought up Elia Kobo, and it's a good time to segue over really quickly into Tyler Ulis. Yesterday, the Suns had a decision to make about Tyler Ulis' contract, non-guaranteed or not. They pushed it back a week to June 30th, which is, I believe, the day after Davon Reed, right?
Yes, it is. And Scott Bordeaux reported that Elfrid Payton, they're unlikely to extend a qualifying offer to him. So he's basically an unrestricted free agent, somebody the Suns don't have to worry about at this point. Ulis will come the day after Reed. What do you think the thinking was there? Because I really couldn't put it together. Why, at least they wouldn't just do it on the same day as Reed, but the day after, it kind of made no sense to me.
I think it was really confusing to me, too, because they signed Elia Kobo to a 4-year, $6 million contract, one of the highest paid second rounders in recent memory, in my opinion. I think maybe I got a tweet from Canis Hoopas over at the SB Nation Timberwolves site. I think Nikola Pekovic got more than Okobo, but he's right up there as far as top 5, top 10 second rounders in total pay. So it kind of surprised me that they pushed his deadline back on the same day they signed him to a new contract, but I honestly, in my opinion, I really can't see how Ulis is on this roster next year, because Okobo is 6'3" with a 6'8" wingspan. Ulis is 5'10" with a 6-foot wingspan. Okobo's already a better shooter. He probably is a better defender with just his size overall and his length. I just honestly, unless they're really buying in on just him being a part of Devin Booker, just having him as his best friend around, I can't see him being around here long at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the only real idea that I have of why they pushed it back rather than just making a decision, which all indications seem to point to Ulis not being on the roster, would just be that it gives them this week to really weigh their options and get a feel of what the market will be like. And then Saturday is basically, you're basically at free agency. That'll start Monday. It'll start Sunday, right?
Yeah, Sunday.
Yeah, the moratorium opens up on Sunday. So maybe it's just that last day really to judge the market throughout this week. But it, yeah, I guess our next segment was to do some of these guards that could be a replacement option or at least a candidate to fill the guard rotation without Ulis kind of ahead of Okobo. And that was, you had three guys, right?
Yeah, I did. And I think these three guys kind of make sense what they're kind of filling the gaps for. I had some other options like Rajon Rondo, but I know you kind of talked me into not putting him on the list because it makes a lot of sense because Rondo is a veteran. I think he's going to cost a little bit more money than Phoenix wants to pay. And he really isn't that much of a fit unless he wants to buy into the culture they're trying to build here instead of trying to already bring what's already established. So for on the list, I'm going to go start off with a big name, in my opinion. That's Marcus Smart. I know Boston has said before that the reports are out of Boston that around $14 million where Boston would probably stop at matching Marcus Smart. So I guess I'll throw out your direction first off, Brendan, with Marcus Smart. Would you pay him $14 million a year for, let's say, 2 to 3 years?
I kind of feel like I would, but it's tough. I think it would have to be a longer-term contract for him to leave the Celtics this year, because there is a possibility for him being a restricted free agent, even though it seems like he's 30 years old because he's been in the playoffs pretty much every year of his career. He can just accept the qualifying offer, which will be around $9 or $10 million, I believe, and then become an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2019 when more teams will have money. He'll probably have some more flexibility as to where he wants to go. So I think it would have to be a longer-term contract. That does give me some hesitancy, but you know, I think he's going to be one of the best options this summer and next summer. He's a genuinely good player. It's not an overpay just for the sake of, oh, this is the guy that we have to pay this summer because he's the best one. It's a really good player, somebody who fits a lot of needs for the Suns. You know, I think really what it comes down to for me as far as a fit perspective, because money really isn't an obstacle. It's just a matter of how they want to eventually spend it, is just, you know, we have to kind of see what plays out with the offense, because if Kokoschkov is genuine about the idea that Booker's not going to be the dominant 94-foot, 100-possession-a-game ball handler, then, you know, they might want to go a different direction as far as somebody who's going to be able to bring some of that passing instinct and be able to play more of a facilitator role. Smart's not really that guy. I think Smart's more of a fit if Booker would be the lead dog ball handler all the time. So if that's not going to happen, maybe Smart's not worth that money because he's not playing the role that he's best in.
Now, I think it's really interesting from this point of view because I know Igor kind of was a shot doctor with Ricky Rubio and really everywhere he's been. And Ricky Rubio had a career year shooting the ball once he got in Kokoskov's guidance, shooting around 34% this year. Looking at Marcus Smart's numbers right now, he's a career 29.3% three-point shooter. Do you think Igor would accept that kind of challenge to really make Marcus Smart into like a 34% three-point shooter?
I mean, I think that the player development team that they're building here, it has to be the one, the kind that is willing to take those challenges. And Kokoschkov himself, even though he won't be involved in as much of a capacity in the day-to-day player development you would expect, he's obviously himself developed a reputation for that. I just don't know if Marcus Smart is like, how long are we waiting on his jump shot? You know, I think he, in my mind, sort of is the player at this point that he's going to be. Obviously, guys at the very end of their career sometimes improve when the rest of their game deteriorates and they're not able to be as athletic and physically imposing. So it's not never, but I think that for the life of whatever contract the Suns signed him to, 3-4 seasons, I don't really imagine that goes up. I think you're getting the guy he's been, which is a very effective player, but, you know, if you're expecting a jump in his shooting accuracy, maybe there are other better options from that standpoint too.
What's crazy to me is looking at Marcus Smart's profile a little bit more, he's only 23 years old still, which is crazy. That's crazy to say. Yeah,
doesn't it seem like he's like 29, like about to be signing his fourth contract or something? It feels like he's been in the league forever.
Oh, I know. And it's crazy to say because like we mentioned, they're 23 years old. He kind of fits perfectly into the age timeline there though.
Yeah, he's what, the same age as Mikal Bridges, right?
Yeah. It's honestly, I think if we're looking at realistic ideas, if the Suns are valuing more defense than scoring with the addition of Elia Kobo and Brandon Knight already in tow, they could go in a direction of Marcus Smart. But let me go to my next guy on my list. He's kind of a similar profile to Marcus Smart, They're both from the Boston Celtics. Ryan McDonough both drafted these guys. Not Marcus Smart, but my next guy on my list is Avery Bradley. He's really been linked to the Suns all throughout the season, really. I think John Gambadoro mentioned him like 4 or 5 months ago as a possible target for the Phoenix Suns. And it makes a lot of sense on the surface, though. He's 6'2", 180, can guard both guard spots, has a long wingspan. The one thing that worries me, though, is his shooting. He kind of tailed off a little bit when he went to L.A. last year. Shot 38% with Detroit, 36% in Boston the year before. Career 36.6% three-point shooter. So he's more of a shooter than Marcus Smart is, but you're kind of banking on Avery Bradley becoming that tenacious defender. And from my standpoint, watching Avery Bradley a little bit more, especially in Detroit and L.A., his defensive intensity really hasn't really been how it's been since he left Boston.
Yeah, and the knock on him to a certain degree has been the inability, or not inability, but all of those Celtics guys, especially from those years where they kind of overachieved even more. I mean, they still brought a team with a rookie as their best player to the Eastern Conference Finals, but even before that, Evan Turner, Jay Crowder, those names from the last era before Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, was that when they leave the team, they're less effective from a statistical standpoint. They all tend to start looking much worse. Jay Crowder like led the league in real plus minus on the defensive end for a couple of seasons, or was at the very top, and leaves Boston, obviously went to the Cavs in the Kyrie trade, and then Utah, just hasn't had the same impact. Avery Bradley the same way. So whether it's Brad Stevens' magic sauce that's doing something to make all these guys look better, or it really is a situation where maybe that talent isn't quite as much as we think it is, they leave Boston and it doesn't tend to work out. So it remains to be seen, with Bradley only having spent a season away from that team, what will actually happen. But I think he's a candidate in my mind. I mean, J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson with Philly were the two biggest examples from last season. But we see guys do this. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, the one-year deal for a crazy overpay could actually make sense for him, I think, where maybe from the team's perspective, the Suns or whoever he ends up with, kind of hedge your bet and give him a bunch of money because you have it to spend, but allow yourself to make another decision before committing to him the next summer. I think he's somebody who could make sense in that way, and it probably wouldn't cost the $20 million that it cost to get J.J. Redick. I think he could be had at a far less price, and for him it makes sense too, because he's only just coming off a four-year, $32 million deal. He wasn't paid what he could have been paid over the course of that deal, so maybe one big payday and then another opportunity to cash in makes sense for him.
What does worry me, though, from a negative standpoint with Avery Bradley is when you look more at his injury history, it's really bad. He's only played plus 70 games two times in his career, and that hasn't happened for 4 years. The last few years, he's played 55 games, 46 games. So that's the one real big worry with him. You're kind of banking on him all of a sudden being healthy for the full season, and I don't know if I trust Avery Bradley on a 1 year contract and he plays maybe 40 games. I feel like that's just a
rule. Well, I agree with you there, and he's not the most terrific ball handler combo point guard type either. I think he's, like you mentioned, not necessarily similar in the way he gets the job done as Marcus Smart, probably a better shooting option, but again, he's going to be off the ball. He's not going to be the kind of guy who's setting up an offense possession after possession. Kukoshkov's offense doesn't require it. Even Ricky Rubio became a spot-up option this year to a certain extent, but it's not as great of a fit, I think, as even Brandon Knight or some of these other options. So, you know, I think the defense is there. I think the real thing we're running into talking about these guys is who exists that is a passer, shooter, and defender at the point guard position. That player doesn't really exist. So that's what's kind of tough about the decision that they're facing.
Now, I guess we can go into a quick contract prediction. If the Suns were to be interested in kicking the tires on Avery Bradley, I know you mentioned the one-year deal, but as far as length and money goes, how far would you go for Avery Bradley? Because I'm thinking from my point of view, I would give him like a 1+1 with a team option for the second year, because Brandon Knight's still on contract through 2020, so they can wash both those contracts off the books. They can do a 1+1 for, let's say, 2 years, $24 million.
Yeah, I think something like that is probably his range, maybe. I kind of wonder if maybe it takes even a little bit more than that, but at the same time, the market's going to be really depleted. He will be one of the better options on it, but at the same time, you know, Lou Williams signed that $8 or $9 million deal. People say that that's a little bit less than what we should be expecting this summer, but at the same time, it's a lot less than 12. So, you know, maybe it takes less than that, maybe it takes more than that, but I think that's right around the range for sure.
Now, before we go into my final point guard, and he's kind of an underrated guy on this list, but are we undervaluing Brandon Knight, and are we kind of talking ourselves into where he could really honestly be the best option the Suns have next year as far as a stopgap option for before 2019 when free agents like Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, for example, hit the free agent market? Is Brandon Knight sort of the perfect guy for that stopgap option?
I think that he's going to be able to fill the role pretty well for the Suns. I think that is part of the reason that I would be fine not solidifying a long-term answer at the position this year, because A, none of the, you know, we're not talking about what if the Suns get Chris Paul or something like that. We're talking about guys who, all things considered, really aren't going to move the needle. So the idea of needing to sign a guy for 4 years doesn't really seem like it makes a ton of sense, because they have a guy in Knight who, injuries are a big question mark, but if he can play through the season, he's going to be a decent option at starting point guard, and they'll be able to develop the other players behind him and kind of figure out what they want this team to look like, and he'll be there to do pretty much everything that you could ask. So I do think it lessens the pressure on them to really nail a signing this summer. But there are guys who are worth an investment. It's just a matter of kind of how they weigh that calculus.
If the Suns value shooting, I'm just looking at Brandon Knight's profile right now. He's going to be 26 to start next season, and he is a career 35.7% three-point shooter, and before McDonough traded for him using the number 10 pick, which ironically the Suns got back from Mikal Bridges, he shot 39% from three. So I think that there really could be some sneaky upside there with him making a renaissance kind of comeback for a stopgap option. But I'll go into my one final guy here for on the free agent list for point guards, and we'll dive in obviously on more guys later in the week. But Fred VanVleet of Toronto, he's a restricted free agent, undrafted free agent 2 years ago. He's one thing I keep reading about with VanVleet is a culture setter, and that's exactly what McDonough's been mentioning multiple times over the past few weeks, is trying to find those culture setters for this new Phoenix Suns roster led by Ayton and Booker. So I think VanVleet's going to cost a little bit of money since he's restricted. I know Toronto wants him back unless they value DeLon Wright more, but how do you see VanVleet's market being? Because I think it's going to be really interesting from the restricted point of view.
Yeah, I think he'll be right in line to be one of the top paid guys just because he is so young, similar to Smart. I don't know if it's so much of an idea that Toronto has to make a decision or like trying to guess which of the two young point guards they like more. I think it's really that they have some extra leverage there because they can move on if needed. They have two options. And then obviously it's a restricted free agency situation, so they can match. So I think that they have the flexibility where it seems likely that they'll get him back if the price is right. And you probably have to overpay if you're a team like the Suns who wants him. I don't know what that looks like. Again, it's really tough to guess. We'll have a much better idea when the first deals start to ring in. I'm sure we'll have plenty going on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday next week when these deals start to come in, but it's tough, and I think it's going to be a long-term deal for him too.
Now, if you look at his contract stats a little bit, he is a restricted free agent, and Toronto can match on anything, but if you go into his starter minutes, VanVleet only averaged 20 minutes per game last year, so stretch it to per 36, which would probably be his starting role in Phoenix long-term. He averaged 15 points, 6 assists, 1.6 steals, and half a block a game. So he kind of fills that all around nature the Suns are looking for. And he also shot 41.4% for three, which is great. So out of all those three guys mentioned, do you think VanVleet kind of ticks the most boxes, surprisingly, more than Smart and Bradley?
Yeah, I mean, I think he gets the closest to those three, shoot, pass, defend. And you can project some growth to him. Whereas Smart, like we said, he's young still. But to me, I think he's more of a finished product than VanVleet, who's really just earning his first NBA opportunity. And I think he's also a much better fit in Kukushkov's offense, where what the Raptors ran last year, which people got to see in the playoffs, I'm sure Suns fans are familiar with the impact VanVleet had for that team. It's similar to what Utah ran. It's similar to what the Slovenian national team ran, with lots of ball movement, lots of player movement, shooting at every position. That kind of system is going to be an easier translation for VanVleet than just about any guy we'll probably talk about all summer.
That's really interesting for me, because I think VanVleet and Okobo has some sneaky good upside for a point guard combo. But we're going to go into your list, Brent. I know McDonough's brought up multiple times the past few weeks about stretch four options. He mentioned to me on Friday about how they're going to target a guy, preferably who can play defense too, can stretch the floor. But looking at the options, I don't think that really exists, does it?
I mean, there's guys. I think Trevor Ariza is probably the person who jumps out first when you think about who's available this summer, reasonably priced. Maybe their team moves on. I kind of, you know, somebody's not going to be on the Rockets next year that we think will be. And depending on what happens with that team, maybe Trevor Ariza's the odd man out, being a little bit older. But he's also such a foundational part of what they do that it would be very tough for them to kiss that chance goodbye with how much defensive flexibility they had. So I think he's another candidate, maybe on a shorter-term deal, pay up a little bit, take advantage of the cap space that the Suns can create this summer. But I don't necessarily know if he fits. You know, it's tough to know. McDonough has outlined a skill set and as far as what they're going to be chasing, but who knows whether the free agents that they target will be on the younger end or veterans. You know, he hasn't really gone into a lot of detail. He said he wants the team to be older, but then in the draft, they made it younger. So there's not a ton of roster spots, and it's just going to be a matter of whether they want guys who can build for the future or they want more instant contributors like Ariza.
I think Ariza is honestly really interesting because he's played small forward his entire career, but if they're listing Mikal Bridges as a 3-4, Ariza is kind of an ideal stretch four if you want to add more space next to Ayton, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's the guy I think that Bridges earned a lot of comps to throughout the draft process, somebody who is a very similar player to Bridges. And so, you know, from a mentorship standpoint or just crafting your team, to have a veteran version of a younger player and have that flexibility that comes with that, I think would be really useful. And obviously, we talk about how much of a perfect fit Bridges is. The same can be said of Ariza.
Now, how far would you go for Ariza? Because I know he mentioned, I believe his agent might have leaked out a couple weeks ago, that he wants like a long-term deal, 4 years, $50 to $60 million. And there's no way I see that happening. But how far would you go from the Suns' point of view?
Yeah, I wouldn't sign him to a long-term deal at all. I don't think he fits the trajectory of the team. I think even if we see veterans signed by the Suns this summer, it'll be a short-term deal. It'll be something where, whether it's one of those huge dollar one-year deals or something more reasonable over two seasons with an option, like you mentioned, something like that, I think it's not going to be – they're not going to go out and sign a 30-year-old player to a four-year deal. Or at least if I'm the team, I don't understand how that could make sense for them where they are right now.
I totally agree with you. Honestly, I do think Trevor Ariza is one of the better overall fits from a win-now veteran point of view. But I know there's another guy on your list that actually does kind of check a lot of the boxes too.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go ahead and say the last two because they're pretty different and we can kind of weigh the pros and cons of each. The younger guy that I think could fit this trajectory that probably makes sense on a longer-term deal is Kyle Anderson from San Antonio. What San Antonio does is going to be really tough because they still don't seem to have a firm answer on the Kawhi Leonard situation. They don't have to make a decision about trading him until at the very – I mean, they really never have to, but if they want to – next February's trade deadline is really the very last deadline. So we don't necessarily even know if we're going to see that happen. They're going to have to continue to operate along their own priority list. So maybe Anderson sticks out from that and doesn't have a firm place in the future of the team and the Suns can swipe in and get him. He's restricted, so they can match, but he does all of the things we're talking about. He became a much better shooter last year. He's known as a pretty solid passer, ball mover type, and plays pretty solid team defense. He's not a crazy athlete, but other than that, I think he fills just about every need this team has on the wing / front court. And then the other guys are Son Ilyasova, which I'm sure people are familiar with, pretty pure stretch four floor spacing guy who can move up to the five in some situations.
Now, I want to talk about Kyle Anderson really quick. I pulled up his stats while you were talking there, and his per 36-minute numbers, he's never started before really much in San Antonio until this year, where he had a really great year, as you mentioned. But his per 36-minute numbers, let's say he's starting over Chris or Bender, last year he averaged 10.6 points, 7.2 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 2.1 steals, and 1.1 blocks. So, like we're mentioning, pass, shoot, and defend, Anderson, like you said, does all that.
Yeah, and I think the real thing about when you even just list his stats, his peer counting stats like that, the impact that comes off to me is just the all-around value that he's going to have on both ends of the floor. He's going to contribute He plays pretty hard. I mean, the fact that he's improved so much after being a guy that people almost laughed at as a first-round prospect when he originally came out, he's improved his shooting, like I mentioned. But I really just think, I mean, so usage rate, the amount of possessions he's using, either shooting or turning the ball over, 13.5% last year with the Spurs. And that was in a year where he had more responsibility and more opportunities. So he's going to be an impactful player without dominating the ball. And when you think about Bridges, Jackson, even if TJ Warren stays, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, you need a guy like that who's going to provide value without the ball in his hands. And as a positional fit, obviously perfect as well.
He seems like almost like a glue type of guy where he's just in a second unit or in a starting role. Like you mentioned, he takes all the boxes as far as all around counting numbers, but it seems like he's the kind of guy that just stabilizes the offense.
Yeah, I think he's going to be somebody who's probably pretty coveted. And I think it would take quite a bit for San Antonio to move on from him, having invested so much in his development and really built him into the player that he is. He's somebody I love watching him, even though he's, again, not, his nickname is Slow-Mo for any fans who aren't familiar with him. It's almost like the joke of his career that he's such a frustrating athlete, but still manages to be effective. Boris Diaw, I guess, type of player, not as big as him, not as great a passer, but think about that kind of, like you said, Evan, glue value. I think that's what Suns fans could expect if Anderson were to make his way to Phoenix. I think he's somebody who I would love to come away with if I'm the Suns.
Now, what's interesting, one more point from the San Antonio point of view, Danny Green accepted his player option, so they might be a little bit against the cap if someone blows them away with an offer from Anderson's point of view. They might not be able to accept it because I can't see a team like San Antonio going into the luxury tax, especially if they trade Kawhi Leonard. So I think I would go easily double digit amount of money for Kyle Anderson, $10 to $11 million a year. How about you?
Yeah, I think I would do that as well, and I would be willing. He's one of the only guys I think a longer term deal would fit for him. I mean, he was an older rookie, so he's already 24, but still, that perfectly fits the trajectory of this team. If you sign him to a 4-year deal, he'll only be 28 at the end of it. That's perfectly fine. You're signing a guy through his prime. So, you know, I don't know. He hasn't been connected to the Suns, but to me, he fits a lot of what they've been talking about looking for.
It kind of fits the McNinja kind of motto. I know he kind of pulled the rabbit out of the hat with Mikal Bridges. No one really knew he was interested in him as his guy, but I could see the same thing going for Kyle Anderson. But let's go real quickly to Ersan Ilyasova. It would be kind of the same situation went to last year. He got cut from Atlanta, went to a team that was in need of veterans in Philadelphia, and he immediately thrived there.
Yeah, he's an awesome shooter. I think people know that more than anything. He's been in the league forever, it seems like. Yeah, drafted in 2005, so his 13th season. Obviously a great veteran to have around from that standpoint, but, I mean, he's also producing still. I mean, I think what I was most impressed by, he has more defensive intelligence than you would expect from somebody that's groundbound like he is. I mean, he would move up. He was basically backing up Joel Embiid as the center in the playoffs last year because of how much shooting and spacing the Sixers needed. So if you think about that potential for him and the, you know, foreign impact that he could have with connections with the coach or Dragan Bender, that stuff I think you have to take into consideration as well. And I just think, you know, he'd be a really solid guy. I wouldn't want to pay him too much if I'm the Suns, but I think he, for what McDonough outlined, I think is another player who just fills the role pretty well.
I think he'd be pretty cheap in the open market, wouldn't he? I mean, I imagine he might be a guy that takes maybe $5 million a year.
Yeah, maybe even less than that. I mean, just depends on what his priorities are at this point. He makes sense to me as somebody who could, with how many, I mean, every team needs a player like him, so maybe there's an older veteran championship contending type team, Golden State, Houston, and he takes the minimum to go play with, you know, chase a ring. But he's not that old. It's not like he's the kind of guy that's 36 then just is on the tail end of his career and needs a ring. I think, you know, he could come to a situation like this for another year or two and get more minutes and, you know, take advantage of what he has left before he gets to that point. But I guess, you know, he'll make that decision in a week or so.
And he's still relatively young, surprisingly. He'll be 31 at the start of next season, so he could easily be a guy where he's like 34, 35 and gets his last contract, goes chases a title after helping out Phoenix. But I think he makes honestly a lot of sense as a stretch four that McDonough has been mentioning the past few days. But to wrap up today's episode, I think honestly one quick quick question I want to throw your way, Brendan. I know, I think honestly for both of our angle points, would you do Fred VanVleet and Kyle Anderson as far as the number one option on both of the lists we mentioned today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the Suns can create enough cap space to do that, but those two guys I think are the top on the two lists we created. So Kyle Anderson, somebody I hadn't really thought about until draft night, but once I got a better image of what the team was going to look like, I think he fits pretty perfectly. So, you know, it might have to be one or the other of those guys and then another dip in next summer, but I think people should be excited about the free agency crop this year. There's a lot of every year, even when it's, oh, there's no free agents, really what the people are talking about is there's no stars or there's no really big name guys who are going to make a huge leap. Like, you know, Julius Randle this summer is a guy, you get him and he's obviously going to continue to get better. Maybe there's no players like that or very few, but there's a lot of guys to be had that are going to continue to improve who are pretty young and fit what this franchise wants to do.
Yeah, looking at all the ages once more, I think Bradley was 26, Smart's 24, Anderson's 24, Van Vliet's 24. All those guys really fit well into the timeline. But that'll be it for today's episode, guys. Appreciate you listening. And we're going to be back on Wednesday and Friday to go even more further all in on free agency. After the draft, it's going to be nonstop.